So I just want to introduce to you your new board. The board's transitioned a couple of weeks ago, but really there's an in-person meeting, all-day board meeting at GWADEC right before GWADEC starts, and the new and the old board meet, and so really coming out of GWADEC is when the new board takes over. So we're going by alphabetical, in the middle, sort of photographing you as you watch him. Is Emanuela Bassi, known for clutter, among other things. Next is Joan Marie Diggs, who is known for her accessibility work. Her favorite color used to be deep, deep purple. Alphabetical last name. Coming, so, last name, alphabetical order. I should have mentioned that Emanuele is secretary of the organization again, and that Joni is now vice president. New to the board this year and taking on the very sought-after position of treasurer is Ekaterina Gerasimova. Okay. who contributes in many ways, including documentation and her hacker chickens. On the end is Toby Mueller. Who is this? Oh, it's a little cut off, but is the superhero who has swooped in to rescue Friends of GNOME recently and does tons of work with the membership committee. We have returning to the board and serving another year as president, Andreas Nielsen. Have you noticed that he really likes birds? New to the board this year, we have a longtime contributor to GNOME, Sriram Ramakrishna. I'll say no more. And also new this year to the board is Marina Zorohinskaya, who is known for bringing a lot of awesome new contributors to GNOME. Did somebody want this more? Do you just want to keep seeing this? I was wondering how, like, pushing the envelope that was as a slide. If it were maybe a little higher. I want to say thank you to Steve Lockby and Bastian Nocera, and also Sean McNance, but he's not here, so he gets parentheses, for having served, in the past year or years. It actually is a lot of work to be a board member, and I think when you see them, you should thank them. So, I have a couple of questions, but let's just open things up right away. Go ahead and ask. We dare you.
What's with the title of the talk?
I want biting.
Who? I don't remember who decided that it should be the board bites back. No. That was not my suggestion. I think it actually was Alan's.
It just sounded more interesting than Q&A.
More interesting than Q&A. I think it's to inspire you to get the board to bite back.
The board barks back? Or?
Can everybody hear the board, people talk without the mic? Okay, great.
Is it? It's not required for any video recording or unique.
It will be better. Do we have another mic that's roaming or? Oh, okay. So you guys have this mic, and I'll stand here, and we can all share. So who else has a question?
Good morning. It's been pretty clear that for the last 3 years or so, we have had a PR disaster running slowly, avalanching downwards. What has the board done during the last year to change the course of that avalanche?
From the marketing team. Okay, you don't want me to answer that question because I'm not on the marketing team and I'm known for not being a marketing person. Yeah, no, I'm. That's why somebody on the marketing team should actually, and on the board, should actually answer the question. You don't want me to do that.
Don't worry. Okay, so the question is what has the board done for the past 3 years?
No, the last year.
The last year. Okay, well, I can tell you. Well, you know, as I said in my talk, sorry, the one nobody attended. Anyway, so for the last year, I personally have been doing a lot of the outreach within GNOME. So a lot of it is, so it started from 3.0 onwards. So let me step back. When we did 3.0, we didn't have any outreach program. There was nothing. We had no infrastructure or anything like that to sort of soften the shock, right? And one of the things we've done is actually create that infrastructure. So we had a number of things we did. One, IRC namespace on Freenode was consolidated under GNOME. So GNOME is that namespace is under our control, right? So we can control the message and control the channels that are created. So nobody puts like, I hate GNOME or something like that. Second, we created the Google Plus pages, the Facebook pages, and we assigned people to monitor them. We created community pages. We had also created forums. So basically, we created a presence. The Google Plus especially has been pretty good because when we first started, there were no developers or anything like that. So now what we have is, at least on Google Plus, we have developers engaged with users. Answering questions. People like Florian have actually even written code that posted on there answering people. So we've gotten to the state where defending GNOME has become a lot easier. If you look on Reddit or anything like that, when a GNOME thread is there, usually it used to be me or a couple other people, sometimes Ola Vitters would jump in, especially on LWN. We would engage, but now we have users coming up saying, I don't know what you guys are talking about, I like GNOME 3. So the tide is changing in terms of what people think of us. We still have a lot to do. It's always a continual process to maintain congress with our users, right? So so I would say our situation has improved a lot, and we have infrastructure now to really engage with our users, especially with things like that. For instance, when the GNOME terminal thing came out, I think we handled that fairly well. We posted on Google Plus. We engaged in Reddit where it happened and things like that. So we're able to contain when something happens.
I would say, so I'm not on the board, but I get to see a lot of the board action. So over the last year, the board was very proactive about assigning resources to help support the marketing team, which has helped a lot. The marketing team was able to have a hackfest, which helped, you know, sort of distill some of the messaging that we want to get across from GNOME, and also sort of helping with you know, the resources and infrastructure to encourage regular meetings. So the marketing committee meets every other week by phone, and that really helps us be able to respond to some of the PR issues. So there's a lot of that. There's also the foundation supports travel for people to go to, you know, to conferences, which helps a lot, and also pays for my time, which you know, is also very helpful in some ways for handling PR. I think also, as I was saying at the AGM, having our you know, having our campaigns be ideological and all of that is driven, the campaigns and everything is driven by the foundation and the board, has really helped a lot with PR issues. When we launched our privacy campaign, we had a lot of people switch back to us, and we got a lot of positive press. So I think the more things that we can do that attract positive attention to us, the better, and the board is in a good position to encourage those things and also to divert resources in areas that they think are important.
Can I add one other thing? Is we have been, especially like for Disquatic, we have been trying to create trying to deliver the energy and good stuff that's been coming out of this conference. So, you know, we've been, Alan has been especially been working extremely hard in communicating what's going on at GWADEC and things like that through various press releases. So we're constantly trying to engage that way by communicating what our aspirations are. So Alan has been on the forefront of a lot of that. So.
A bit of a follow-up on the same line of conversation. It seems that your answer to how we manage the PR disaster is basically better damage control and more defense. I wonder if, I could see two other places. First of all, like maybe before the damage happens, if we're taking certain decisions that are going to cause lots of damage, perhaps if we could get involved in better explaining those to the community, why we are doing this, or even to take it a step further and maybe take some of the feedback we're getting and change how GNOME functions. So not just like dealing with damage after the fact, but preventing it and maybe even addressing some of the complaints instead of, like, I mean, addressing them with actual action instead of just going into damage control mode. Does anyone on the board think that the board has a role in doing this?
So I think our social media presence in part answers that, because on particularly on Google Plus, but on other channels, like we so often repost some of the most interesting blog posts by leading contributors, that it builds excitement towards the features and also gives a forum for discussion. So I feel like a lot of the people who are in fact, you know, the active users who are following us on Google Plus, and we also have a forum there, not just, so, you know, it's not just the GNOME's account, but it's also a GNOME forum. And so I think our engagement there is also not just remedying the situation, but is also engaging people where they feel that they are part of, like, knowing what's happening and can provide feedback early on.
What Marina said, it's absolutely true. We are proactive in terms of trying to get out the message of what we're doing. Sometimes we can only be reactive in some cases because we don't have a single unified voice, and we cannot have it, and we shouldn't have a single unified voice that everybody in the project goes through. So sometimes stuff just happens. What we can do as a board, we can try to ask everyone to be mindful of their position in the project, especially if there are like core maintainers or core contributors to the platform or the entire collection of projects that is GNOME. be mindful of their position there, that every time they open their social media or they open the blog, their blogs to write a post or something, what they say is not just what they think, but also reflects on GNOME as a project. So that is probably the most proactive thing we can do as a board. Ask everybody to be mindful of that. We don't want to have... we don't want to continuously go around chasing people for writing blog posts like, this is the last Quadec, or everything is going to be... Sorry? Staring into the abyss, or something like that. It's not that we don't want people to write criticism of the project, but it has to be constructive criticism.
Well, so let me do a follow-up question on that, since I have the microphone and I can. I mean, the flip side to that question and sort of what I'm hearing from Ryan's question is also, what can we do to help improve better communication within the project? You know, sort of, you know, have a better public-facing explanation sometimes when decisions are taken and to make sure that that kind of communication is there. Does anybody?
Well, yes, but it's even more than that. It's not just how can we communicate better, but it's maybe how can we internalize some of these criticisms we're receiving.
How can we internalize some of the criticisms that we're receiving? But I would sort of say...
So that's a minor thing. I totally get that. But we are routinely criticized, for example, for removing features without consideration for existing users. And this is something that drives me bonkers. It's something that I see everywhere, and I think it's a legitimate complaint.
Okay, so where'd that come?
So where that comes from is actually legacy, right? So when we went from GNOME 1 to GNOME 2, we were a fairly young project. We didn't do any community outreach. So when we were already going through that whole phase from the first 8 releases of GNOME 2, we were removing features, but we never told them the context of why we were doing it. So because nobody went in there and said publicly, this is why we're doing it, those myths continue to perpetuate. So a lot of the people who are saying the removing features are actually people who are remembering GNOME 2. That's my opinion. I believe that's exactly what happened because we didn't do any community management at that time. And I know this because even when we were going through GNOME 2.20 and all that, you go on a social media site like Slashdot, it's the same stuff. The same criticism was happening continuously on all of them. I mean, I monitor those sites all the time. And even in those days, you would never think that GNOME was the number one desktop even on Slashdot because this is constantly set of negativity. Sure. Yeah.
This is not
the Nautilus is an interesting case.
I was just going to say that it seems to be more of a social problem that actually members of our community do need to communicate more with each other and maybe actually say what they're going to do before they do it. And that's something that each person needs to do on their own. It's not something that we can force them to do. We can ask people to do it, but we can't force them because everyone's an individual. I mean, if there is a project you're specifically interested in, maybe you should actually go and hack on it. And then you'll have a say in how it goes.
I asked if perhaps the board feels that they should have a role in setting the tone or the culture of the project influencing it?
Well, we do represent the project because we've been voted in. So I hope from that point of view we can at least set that tone in some way. But all we can do, I think, is just ask people to be awesome to each other. Yeah.
Well, not necessarily. I was going to say slightly the same, that we can mildly, like, or be a mild role model, maybe, and by, I don't know, communicating nicely also to the outside world, trying to set, you know, positive examples for our fellow project members. I don't think, because I don't think we can do a lot, well, of precise, or we can't take precise actions, I think, because at least I see myself as someone that directs resources and makes, I don't know, decisions, not necessarily hard technical decisions within the project, but facilitates that the project works. And so I don't know, I wouldn't see myself as someone that goes straight, I don't know, onto these social platforms and communicates with the users, for example, but rather facilitate that we as GNOME can do that. Does that make sense?
I'm going to try to move the microphone amongst people who haven't spoken more. So, but let's hear more from Jenny.
Okay. Yeah, I'm being heard. Okay. So one of the things, I got to cough just a sec. Okay. So one of the things I think that is, to me, it's actually a very fascinating problem that GNOME has, is that, I mean, when you think about it, we're a bunch of individuals and a bunch of teams working pretty autonomously. And yet, somehow, when you think about it, we managed to pull off an entire major product on a perfectly well-scheduled, you know, six-month, every single semester, for lack of a better word, basis, and have been doing it for, God, I don't even know how many years. I've not been around, you know, since before, you know, I was here since 2005, but we've been historically doing this. We're like a company, and yet, of course, we're the complete opposite of a company. And so to the outside world, everyone is kind of looking at us, at least in my mind, I mean, not exactly like we're Apple or Microsoft, but we're this big monolithic thing, and we're not. And so in answer to Ryan's original question, yeah, I think the board does have an active role, but it's at the same level as the marketing team and as the design team and the accessibility team and the release team. And I think what, you know, every time we try to have a foundation meeting, a few people show up and then, you know, the board or whoever hosted it says, eh, no one comes. Maybe not exactly end open foundation meeting, but maybe what all of the individual teams need to do is have regular, you know, at least representatives, like the board meets with the design team and is, you know, the release team's present and accessibility team's present, and we can all sit around and say, you know what, guys, we're going to remove this feature from Nautilus. And if that is the decision that the people who make those decisions make, well then, okay, the marketing team might need to do something. Or maybe, you know, we want to have a discussion about, okay, well, we can remove it, but for the geeks who really want it, maybe they're, you know, we need to discuss. Because if we give the impression to the outside world, just by the quality work that we produce, that we are a, you know, a monolithic creature, that's what we're going to see, that's how we're going to be treated on Slashdot. And that's how we're going to be treated on Reddit. But functionally, we all know that we're not such a monolith.
In terms of structure, GNOME is pretty flat. So there is not, it's a lot of teams at the same level. So yeah, maybe we should increase the height of hierarchy a little.
I'm sorry. But just to quickly follow up, I'm actually saying the opposite. But because we are flat, we all, our individual little units need to talk together a lot more and coordinate our actions a lot more.
I think the board actually does have.
The mic.
I'm actually responding to some of those points too. Like, I think the board actually does have the ability to make some changes in this, and I would just want to point out that if you, anybody in the audience at any time has any suggestions for concrete actions the board should take, email the board. It's very easy to do, and the board will consider all actions that are emailed to it. I think that a point that hasn't been made here is that the board has the power to implement a code of conduct or to change the code of conduct that we have already, and that's something that maybe the board could evaluate. Respond to some of them. He says, what are you going to do to make this happen?
Well, since I only just now kind of listening really thought about it, when I get back, I guess I'm going to email, I'm going to write down that I have an action item to email all the other teams and say, you know, do you all agree and how often should we meet and where should we meet, and let's all get on the same page so we can coordinate what happens a lot better than we are now.
Ryan, if you think that there are particular, you know, action items that should be taken in these meetings, let the board know. Yeah. Ryan says that he thinks Joni's idea sounds wonderful.
Yeah. So, and I well, that's loud. I agree. That I think the board can set the culture to be not just to say that if we're going to remove features, that's fine, but we need to have a public discussion before we do that. So that it's not, at least to the outside, appearing like all of a sudden tabs are gone from Nautilus, or all of a sudden compact view is gone from Nautilus. And I know that there may be some internal discussion going on within the team, but from the outside, even if you're not on the team, it's hard to see that, and it's hard to see that, and it gives the appearance that people are just removing things without a discussion.
I wonder, like, should we also have these concrete when we add things, right? Because that also costs in a way. And I think one thing that is like real helpful is like meeting each other properly in such as this conference, right? But I'm also, yeah, I mean, to some extent, like, if the release team, right, says, like, unfortunately, we cannot release that, then that is how it is, right? They say, like, this new version of this application cannot go into release, which is possible. Huh? Yeah, but what I'm saying is that, like, to some extent, the board also explicitly has, cannot take technical decisions, right? As written in bylaws. So it's kind of tricky in that way. And I also came to think of, like, to keep things civil, right? So, I mean, like, we had discussions in the past on certain mail lists, right, where people went out of hand and, like, it just exploded in discussion, right? So I recall, like, the last year, the board had to tell an individual to please calm down or he or she would be banned from the list. So I guess that's a part of it, but I also know that it's not exactly what you're asking for.
But we also need to be mindful of the fact that, you know, design business committee doesn't work real great. So while we could have those discussions, we should be trusting people who are, you know, doing the design, or people who are doing the release, or people who are doing the coding. And, you know, people who want to participate in those discussions need to be a lot more involved than just kind of like, you know, having a long forum about who wants some feature and who doesn't.
I just would like to add that, I mean, this whole discussion is going on with the background that it's axiomatic that we're going to continue to remove features, and that, in fact, we have removed features. Well, it's only in the last 3 years that work right with the correct defaults has been conflated with removing features. In my opinion, I mean moving settings from Control Center to Tweak Tool is not removing features. So that if you look at the actual number of things that we have removed, there've been a small handful of applications. The rest of the stuff has been moved around. So all I'm saying is, like, can we stop talking about removing features? And if we do, okay, talking about it in these terms, but if we do, what's the longer product we're trying to create where we can go back to the original, perhaps GNOME motto, where the defaults are correct? Because that sort of vision seems to be swamped now by we are the distro that, or the, we are the DE that removes features. I mean, I don't think it's always been this way, the conversation.
We're trying to create a product that is straightforward to use, and we are iterating on what that might be.
Fabiana, just wait for the microphone.
I really see that. I truly believe that we have to stick with our design vision, but I think it's our role to communicate why we are making certain changes, not only after people get really upset or angry, but like beforehand. So this is going to happen. This is what's coming. And not just let people get really mad and upset and feel like they have been neglected or that nobody thought about them, so that we will say something, then we'll write a blog post about it. If something is going to land, we usually know it's going to land, I mean, in advance. So I don't see any reason why we would not have this conversation with the community before things happen, so people can, can prepare for it.
There's a bit of a danger there, because when you open up that much, you can really get bogged down by people who nitpick. I mean, you don't want to constantly have a discussion. I mean, it is our project. It is a direction we're going. When people complain, there's a number of reasons behind why they complain. It's sort of strange. Just by the amount of people who are complaining is actually probably fairly small. But they're loud and they're consistent. A lot of them don't use GNOME because they. This comes from hours of conversations with these people. I mean, this is by engaging, and then I find out that they were angry back in GNOME 2, and they left then, and they cannot seem to get over the fact that. over the fact that somehow they've been betrayed. I mean, a lot of the people who are complaining feel betrayed.
Yeah, but you only feel betrayed because nobody told you beforehand. Otherwise, you wouldn't feel betrayed. That's what I'm saying. From the last couple of incidents that we have experienced, I feel that people calmed down a lot after the reasons were exposed and the rationale of our decisions was posed, and they often feel more outraged by our lack of exposure of those reasons, of those motivations, and then by the actual removal of the feature. They tend, of course, hate is always going to happen, but I think people tend to forget faster if the reasons are posed.
So it's not always clear that the people using the people engaged in this are actually users in using our software.
I think what Ryan's question was for people that were involved. So I think you're right. I'm violating my own rule. I think you're right that that does happen. But I think what Ryan was asking was more specific and not for not for the people who aren't using GNOME. And I think that Fabiana was sort of addressing. That very same issue. And I wonder, is there something we can, I mean, I brought up the code of conduct because that's something that the board has control over. You know, is there some way to build in some kinds of procedure that require, some process of documentation whenever something is implemented?
Is it just me, or is it like only Alan and Matthias who does their blogging homework properly? Because they actually, like, both of them, like, blog quite a lot on, like, upcoming changes, right? And I think it would be helpful to see similar things from other developers.
Do you mind if we have Alan?
So I agree. Like, it's obviously good to get out ahead of potentially controversial decisions and to do kind of engage with people when making those decisions. And there's always a lot more that we could be doing, and we could always be better. But, you know, this is a free software project. People come here to hack, to do good work, to feel empowered, to be able to do something. And we don't have the kind of resources to do as much as we'd want. Our hackers don't get into this to be public relations people. They get into to hack, and I think we should, and same for our designers and our documentation writers and everyone else. And I mean, what we really need is more marketing resources so that we have like dedicated PR people who, when they see like that there's a potential situation brewing, they can kind of get the story and talk to people and do all the work that's necessary. I mean, this is what happens in companies, right? This is how companies manage public relations. And I'm not discounting the idea that this is just some kind of marketing problem. You know, there are decision-making processes to consider as well. But until the day when we have kind of paid marketing people for Gnome, situations like this are going to arise. I mean, the marketing team that we have are volunteers. You know, we have a limited amount of time. We're not marketing professionals. We do what we can.
That's why we thought about changing the name of the marketing team to promotion or outreach or engagement or something like that, because it sounds like we're really slick and corporate marketers.
Yeah, I mean, that's generally where kind of product management comes in some shape or form, often. Like, there's some kind of liaison person. And generally, that's the role that I try to perform, right? Like, so, I mean, you know, I will generally know of issues as they're coming up. And I know there are kind of other people who are working closely with design and development who know about them. But then the question is, what do you do about it? Because, you know, I think even if we did let the marketing team know, I'm not entirely sure that we have the capacity to do much about it.
Does someone from our team think we need to be more active in keeping track of everything that goes on? And how do we do that? Do we just need to be reading every last comment?
Well, I mean, that's what we already do with, like, you know, myself and Matthias and John and everyone else. I mean, we know what's going on. I mean, the information is there.
So, one idea we could do is maybe work a little closer with the release team. Release team would know the set of features and everything else, and they could give us a heads up.
The release team has a very, very well-defined like role in terms of not just deciding, also spinning the release, unless that marketing person does that. I think what needs to happen is more people should follow the release team. I mean, marketing, design, everybody should follow the release team, not be on the release team, because that would be kind of pointless, but they should follow marketing. The release team, the release team is this magical creature that lives in a forest and sometimes gets out of the forest and drops a steaming pile of packages for distributions to pick up and make like gold out of it.
You are not invited to be on the marketing team.
I know. That's why I'm not. But the it's not that mythical. It's not. It's a bunch of people actually running a bunch of scripts and fixing the issues that come up when building the collection of projects that is GNOME. They are human beings, and they do human being stuff. So people should just talk to them. Read what they write in their emails. It's not high elvish, so it's sometimes it's English, it's decent English as well. So it should be readable, right? And people should just follow. There is a mailing list that is with public archives. People can actually follow what happens there. So if you want to be involved in the release team, just follow the release team. Stalk them on IRC as well.
I actually think it's a good suggestion that should be evaluated.
Just, I think, perhaps to answer Emily's question, so I have to follow, in terms of, do I have to read all the commits? So for Tweak Tool, I have to follow all the projects that I think might remove features in future, and it's only like six projects, so just follow Nautilus, the schema changes, Settings Daemon, Control Center, and the mailing lists for DDL and GTK Devel. Although I do sometimes wonder if there's secret IRC channels that I'm not privy to, but like it's not that much work. So
we did have this notion of doing weekly, but that somebody would do weekly reports of what was going on in various modules. That could be, if somebody wants to volunteer doing something like that, that would help a lot for a lot of us. We need somebody who can mangle those things, and maybe that's something I can get volunteers for to do, is to do those reports. You're right.
And I just wanted to say that what we're hearing is that we need more people filling in liaison roles. And I'm just thinking, I met Alan 4 years ago when we were both on our way to Gran Canaria. So, you know, in 4 years you can be Alan and have fans if you, you know, start... If you start being a liaison between designers and marketing, or between release team and marketing, and we need more people filling in those roles and wanting to kind of, you know, see what's going on and try to explain it. We need more people to communicate.
We've gone a little bit far away from it now. I've been trying to ask a question for a while. But something happened about 10 minutes ago. I was talking about how the board has a role in setting the tone for the community, influencing the culture. And two members of the board, in front of a room full of people, basically said that people who criticize GNOME aren't even using GNOME. I heard it out of Sri, and you sort of implicitly agreed.
That is a pretty radical interpretation of the subtext, and I think you're absolutely wrong.
This is what I heard. I mean, that's certainly how I took it. Okay. And I think this is an attitude that pervades GNOME, and I think it's to our hazard. We too often dismiss our detractors, I think.
I'm going to talk for myself, because I actually said something like that, but I said we should let people criticize GNOME, even inside GNOME, but they should be mindful of their, if they're in the GNOME project, they should be mindful that their words reflect on the overall project, so they should be very clear about having constructive criticism.
Okay, so I'm going by.
Can you repeat what Ryan said?
Okay, so you are telling me. Well, okay, so I had made a statement that a lot of the people who complain about GNOME are not GNOME users, right? I said that because there, a lot of times when I do, I mean, the people I engage with them on a one-to-one basis in a number of forums. So this isn't coming from an off-the-cuff remark. This is...
Meanwhile, there are many complainers who are people who love it,
Right, right. And
it says that there okay, are many so people there's who are a, complaining who okay, do love GNOME.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
I was just repeating the question since you didn't have a microphone, that Ryan is saying that there are people who are complaining who love GNOME and who are users of GNOME.
Well, it's the thing, right? I'm so, sorry. You know, like the classical saying, like, I'm so angry at you because I love you, right? And like I see your wrongdoing, but I so believe in the thing we have together, right? So I mean, yeah, I mean, like, if you are really, really unhappy, then you are just indifferent, right? So
that's actually the definition of abusive relationship. I don't want to phrase the conversation of GNOME in terms of that. Sorry.
Oh, all right. That is definitely not my intent. I really don't. Yeah.
So
no.
Okay. So there's a subtlety in that whole argument about whether other people have the right to complain if they're not using our software. That's not my intention. I'm not saying that others cannot complain about the project. I take when people criticize, I take everything seriously, regardless of whether they're from GNOME or not. It's because everybody is a potential returning user too, right? So I'm just saying that when we're addressing problems, that you need to keep in mind that some of them, it was specific to what Fabiano was saying in the sense that when we air our laundry, that and you're trying to have a conversation, some of the conversation you're going to have is sort of noise because there is a set that haven't forgotten, as I said, I was talking about betrayal, and they're just doing it. They have no intention to come back or anything, but they cannot seem to get past that part. And there is a subset like that. In fact, there's a lot of reasons why people dislike GNOME. There's from a variety of reasons. There's a class of people who dislike GNOME because it's trying to be popular. And there's a set of people who like having their own niche OS. And they want to keep it for themselves. In the same vein, they don't like, for instance, more women joining the movement. In the same sort of thing, it's their niche. This is what I've gleaned from having conversations with people like that. It's sort of, there's a certain psychosis in some of these. So I'm not, I usually can tell what's valid criticisms and what is not, which is, and what is noise to some extent, just because I've been doing it for three, four years, whatever it is. So I do that personally because I know it. So when I'm out there doing it, none of the things I say is said in a way that gives the impression that GNOME doesn't care unless you're a user or not. I mean, the words are not said that way.
Okay.
So, I'm a pretty old hat here, and I've been going to God for 10 years. And yeah, I also used GNOME by the time we had a FTP client embedded in the panel. We had a shell embedded in the panel. I'm still hating you all for removing my favorite feature of all time, by the way. I'm not going to tell you what it was, but you removed it. Yeah. But back in that day, we got around and had a pretty clear vision statement for GNOME, what a GNOME application was, what it was supposed to do in the form of the HIG. In the 2.0 days, it was pretty much the guiding document of the whole project, what is GNOME. And then we got to 3.0, and we have a tablet interface that's supposed to work on touch screens, that's supposed to remove all the features and only work on the 3D graphics and so on. And we're... Why do you think I'm mentioning it here? But what I mean here is that we lost our mission statement. We lost the guiding light that others see what are we trying to do.
I think our mission statement is pretty damn clear. We should make an operating system or an environment that is delightful to use, a joy to use for the users. And it's free, and it's open source, and it's a great user experience. That is the mission. That has always been the mission. I mean, even GNOME 1.4, we didn't make a project to make it so hard and impossible to users to use their computers because we hate people that use GNOME. And we like to impose misery on the people that use our
software. There's someone raising their hand up there.
Right.
So, from what I understand from various comments from various people, there is a communication problem and there is a lack of a single person that could coordinate various teams and who could not impose but probably set the direction and the vision. So, should we allocate or can we allocate some resources in the form of an official CTO of GNOME or something like that?
Oh, God, yeah. Sorry? The GNOME project leader, yes. Yeah, I vote.
Project owners is module maintainer, right?
No, I vote we bring Jeff Vaughn back and we have him like being the or we could ask Mark. I mean, he's already doing that for Canonical for Ubuntu, so we can ask Mark to do that. For GNOME. Sorry?
Everything within be brown.
Oh yeah. But yeah, should we nominate somebody that is the self, well, not the self-appointed, the foundation-appointed benevolent dictator for life of GNOME? Who said that? Who had the guts to say that? you don't want me for that. I really don't. No, I think that's not a great idea at all. I think it's good that we have various teams that are involved in their specific areas. They need to get better at talking to each other. That's true. But yeah, that's it. We shouldn't have one person that deals with that.
Okay, so I've been wanting to say a couple of things, but the last question is related to one of the things I wanted to say. And it was, where did he go? Oh, there he is. But that what we have, and this is what I was saying back when I answered Ryan, we have a communication problem. Namely, we aren't communicating amongst ourselves. Someone was saying, I think it was Alan, that, you know, we aren't professional PR people. But man, I am looking at our marketing team, and they're acting pretty darn professional. And if we actually keep them in the loop, and if we actually keep the release team, Alex, did the release team even know about Nautilus removing that feature, Mr. Pinheiro? So what's that paying attention? My question is, did the release, some of the discussion was the release team, if the implication that they knew, say, about the Nautilus removal, did you guys even know about that? But while he's figuring out the mic thing, the other thing I wanted to point out or respond to, I think it was Fabiana who said it, but something that I've been thinking about for a while, but like I've really been thinking about it as I'm sitting here, it's like, okay, so this happened maybe after GNOME 1. This definitely happened after GNOME 2. What did we learn from that? Why did in GNOME 3 this happened? You know, it's like history just keeps repeating itself. So the next time we're going to do, you know, when GNOME 4 comes out, this bloody well better not happen because we have been here, you know, it's like Groundhog Day, that movie Groundhog Day, where you wake up every day, it's the same stupid thing. If we start all communicating now and we all keep all of us in the loop, and we can all be proactive instead of reactive. When GNOME 4 comes out, this crap isn't going to happen. And if it does, well, then we learn from that, and then we're ready for GNOME 5.
Yeah, but about that, I mean,
some of the questions that about the release teams will do that, the release team, is something like a deja vu from last year. I mean, one of the reasons we are having these specific questions is because last year the release team was the one who delayed the AGM. Because as some other people mentioned, some people feel that the release team should do more than they are doing right now, but as Emmanuel is saying, I thought he used a strange analogy. The analogy that I would like to see is that the release team is a tool. I mean, it's just like a smart, or I would like to think that it's a smart building machine. I mean, they have what they do is just basically compile all the genome stack. For example, also there are a feature proposal period. Release team doesn't decide. I mean, we are going to take this and these features. It's not like that. The feature proposal is sent to the desktop devil, and the people talk, and the release team says on the meeting, "Okay, people say that the next that the we should include this and this feature. Our mission is being a benevolent overlord and being sure that the future is going on and picking people. But we are picking people not because we have a power. We are picking people because those people propose a feature and the community approve that." So in that sense, I thought, I agree with Johnny that probably we should try to learn something from the past. I think that she is using the sample of GNOME 2 to GNOME 3. I think that the people have the feeling that release team have a lot of power because of this. When on Turkey and Istanbul, the release team was the face that proposed the GNOME 3 thing. But in the end, they just proposed that and the community agreed with that. What I'm saying is that the release team is not a decision, a decision team. It's just a tool. And now talking about my opinion, my personal opinion, I agree with Manuel that in the end it would be a bad idea to having a real overload, saying we should do that, because in the end, I mean, we are talking about free software and the power decision is at the maintainer's hand. So, I mean, it would be something strange to say to the maintainer, you should do that, or you should do that other thing.
So, yeah, I raised my hand a while ago. So with regards to what Alan said before that, you know, we're just here to hack, I don't know, I mean, when I wanted to fix my first bug, I needed to learn about code guidelines and do proper indentation and use Bugzilla, and I mean, the fact that we're not professional PR people doesn't mean that we shouldn't get better at it, right? So I because I do agree with people that it's not even to the outside of the community, it's between the people in the community that we don't know which each group is doing. And fair enough, but that's much better than saying I'm not a professional communicator. So you just say I don't want to be one.
In response to Alan, I mean, I know what you're saying, but it's not you and you and you and you and you. It's we, and I think that's at the team level. There's not like thousands of teams in GNOME. If the teams at the team level start talking, I think we'll make some progress.
I saw a suggestion on the microblogging feed to highlight good communicators and to actually draw attention to the people who are trying to help in this area, and I think that's a good suggestion. Does anybody want to move on to another question? I think we've talked about this a lot, or has a completely different point to make about this?
See, I've been maintaining, you know, I've maintained evolution for years. You know, it's probably one of the oldest projects that's still alive. I don't think, you know, a module needs, you know, technical policing either by a release team or by, you know, someone called a CTO. It has to be the maintenance things. You know, we have had features which probably, you know, the maintainers who are there today don't know how it works, but it works because there are some still, you know, some people around the world who are using it. So before you remove a feature, I think it's the maintainer's role to take care if that's being used or not. You know where your bugs are coming from, you know the user list and all those things. I think it should be more based on that to take into addition. I don't think about, you know, any other policing from either the release team or, you know, any other team. That's how it should work. And if a feature's been removed, I think it should be centralized to that model instead of saying, you know, GNOME 3 as a whole thing. You know, that's how I really see this.
Does anybody want to address that? How are we doing on time?
We're way over.
Oh, I was waiting for the 10-minute sign.
That was half an hour ago.
Okay. Thanks, everybody, for caring so much about GNOME to stick around. Thanks, Fabiana.
No, I just wanted to make a comment because Emanuele said that he thinks our mission statement is pretty clear, and I don't think it is. I think we have saying we are providing a great experience for everyone is a very good draft, and it gives an overview of what we're trying to do, but saying a great experience for users, it's pretty naive to say that we can please everybody in the world with one single experience, so we cannot. So we're definitely focusing in a certain kind of person, and we might as well figure this out together. And great experience is a very broad term. Great experience for what? Great experience how? In which way? So I think there's a lot of gaps we need to fill, and we have a strong basis, but I guess there's a lot of gaps we need to fill.
It needs to be. Okay. There is a lot of things to define in that particular mission statement. It's a mission statement should not be 3 pages long to detail who our users are or who they are not or how the user experience should be delightful or how it should not be delightful. I think a broad mission statement is fine and has to be chiseled down on very specifically with the help of the marketing team or the outreach team or whatever it calls. Bob. I like Bob. And the release team and everybody else that works on GNOME at a higher level than just a single module maintainer. And it has to be handled by each and every maintainer in its own way. So that's important. But the mission statement can be a tagline. The effort needs to fill the gaps.
How many people here would participate in a Foundation's IRC meeting to discuss this further? I would. Okay, let's get, this will be the next IRC meeting of the Foundation. I think we should probably wrap this up and make sure that we have plenty of forums going on throughout the year to discuss this. This shouldn't be only a Guadec thing. I mean, we've got such a passionate and involved community. I do want to end I want to end on a slightly different note. The board meets every other week, which I've been involved in, as you guys know, a lot of nonprofit organizations. This is the only one I know that is like this, where the board wants to meet so often. Most boards that I've been involved with meet like quarterly at most. So every other week is insane. It's a lot of work. And so I just want to ask quickly, in like one sentence or less, what is it about GNOME that makes you think that it's worth serving on the board to meet every other week and to, you know, have to answer for the project in general? Should I start at this end or this end?
The passionate community.
Also the community.
I love you guys, that's why.
Now I feel like I need a short, snarky, pithy thing, and I don't have one. But to be brief, oh, crap. I'm way past. Equal access to software information for everybody all over the world. Community.
No. It's worth it.
It's really, it really is. So I'm sorry, what was the question again, specifically?
No, it's worth also for this. We love you.
No, but it was like, I had issues hearing when you were there.
Andreas, you've been president of the organization now. You're in for a second term. Why do you spend your time doing it?
One sentence or less.
Why is it worth
one sentence or less.
I'm not sure it's going to be very inspirational, aspirational or something, but you know, like, somebody needs to do it, right? someone needs to do, like, the... There are so many other people that do, like, a lot of really hardcore development, but someone needs to do, like, the boring meetings, but fun meetings, too, but, like, long, yeah.
So for me, it is the high standards and the friendly communities that I'm proud to like introduce new people to, and you know, that we're building something that can reach a lot of people.
Thank you all. We should have these conversations all the time. So we'll announce the next Foundation's IRC meeting. Please join us. Tell everybody else who wasn't here today that they should join the IRC meeting, and let's keep doing it. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you.